I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash them in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And while true love, angels are love.
Welcome to the Skippy and Panty Show. Today we're going to be interviewing author Sarah Kuhn, who has Heroin Complex coming out July 5th from Daw Books. Some of you may know her from her novella, One Con Glory. And today I am joined by Trish. Hi, Trish.
Hey, Mike.
So you just finished this book today, so I bet you're super excited too.
That's right. I am excited about it. It was a really fun book to read. Very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, I totally agree. So Sarah, thanks so much for coming to have a chat with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thanks for reading the book.
So for folks who are just jumping in on our normal feed, could you give kind of a short version of what Heroin Complex is all about?
Sure. So it is the first in a series about Asian American superheroines. And the first book is about Evie Tanaka, who is a personal assistant to a glamorous superheroine. And they also just happen to be childhood best friends. They have kind of a unhealthy codependent relationship. And it's about their adventures in San Francisco and Evie sort of finding her way and learning not to be as much of a wallflower and to maybe become a heroine in her own right. And there are just fun, goofy things like demons shaped like cupcakes and supernatural karaoke. And I'd say the main thing is that hopefully it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I think you've done a very good job of that. I found myself cackling and or just beaming all the way through. So total A-plus on a fun read.
I'd agree with that for sure.
So I heard about One Con Glory a while back, kind of just as it was going. For folks who have read One Con Glory, how would you say that Heroin Complex is either different or some kind of evolution for you as a writer in terms of what you've done that before and what you're doing now?
Well, I think that Heroin Complex, first of all, is urban fantasy. One Con Glory is contemporary romance. I think what they have in common is they're both very nerdy. They have a lot of shout-outs to sort of geek things and fun pop culture things. They're both very snarky. They both have a lot of romance at the heart of them because I'm a big romance reader and I love writing romance. And then the difference is, are that, you know, obviously One Con Glory is much shorter. It's like 100 pages. You can probably read it in about an hour. Heroin Complex is much longer. It is many words. It took me much longer to write. And I think the storyline is perhaps a bit more complicated. One Con Glory, for people who haven't read it, is a romantic comedy set at a comic book convention. And it's about a snarky fangirl who is trying to get back sort of her one true action figure love that she lost long ago. And it takes place over a standard convention. So it's about, you know, 3 days. Heroin Complex takes place over a slightly longer period of time and encompasses more characters and maybe a bit more of a complicated emotional arc. But I think that they both are very much my voice. They have a lot of me in them and they feature, you know, strong, complicated, grouchy female lead characters.
Nice.
I would just take a teeny bit of issue about it being many, many words. That sounds a little intimidating. It shouldn't feel that way to any of our listeners. It's so easy to just dive right in with the demon cupcake fight.
Maybe what I should have said is that for me, it felt like a lot of words. Just because my background is I'm a journalist and I was very used to writing things that are pretty short. you know, maybe like a big piece would be like 3,000 words. Mm-hmm. Heroin Complex, I think, is over 100,000 words. So to me, it feels like a lot of words, but that just might be from my side of the computer screen.
Right. Now, have you always felt like you wanted to build toward long-form writing with a novel, or is this just something that came up within the last couple of years for you?
Well, I always knew that I want... Actually, no, let me take that back. I did not always know I wanted to be a writer. I always loved writing. When I was younger, my friends and I in elementary school started our own sort of... I guess it was like a newspaper, but it only covered things we were interested in, like the newest Babysitter's Club book, and like what was happening with our friends at school, like all the big gossip. So that was sort of my entree into writing. And then journalism I got into because I just loved the idea of telling these really interesting true life stories. And also, I was very practical. You know, I had the Asian sort of tiger mom, mm-hmm. and she was very big on you need to do something in life that you can make a living at. And I had always heard journalism was a job where you could write every day and get paid for it. And that sounded pretty awesome. And fiction, I did some in college. I wrote some bad screenplays, like I think everyone does, some probably pretty bad short stories. But I did not write anything longer, actually, until One Con Glory. And that was supposed to be just a short story for this little zine my friends and I were doing. It sort of spun out of a group blog we did together. We wanted to do this PDF zine for geeks featuring geek essays and geek fiction and all these kinds of things. And I wrote it as a short story for the three friends I was doing the zine with. And then when I got to the end of the piece that was supposed to go in the zine, I was like, I actually think there's more to this story. Like it actually needs to continue. And it did for a couple issues, and it ended up being serialized online, and it was very exciting. But that was sort of the first time I had really written something that long, and I guess proved to myself that I could do it. So yeah, it was a meandering path to getting into fiction.
That's interesting, because looking at Heroin Complex, structurally, I found it, you know, very sound. So it seems like you adjusted and adapted to long form really effectively. But maybe what I could see in that then is that the chapters themselves really rounded out. Like the end of a chapter wasn't just like it wasn't an ellipses. It really was a hard stop. Like here's a thing, and then if something else is raised, then it's a little bit more rounded off. So, you know, I could have seen this novel serialized if it had to be, but I think works quite well as a novel. So kudos on that.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I think that I do really value structure in all kinds of writing. And maybe some of that came out of, you know, in journalism, it is very structured and you only have a certain amount of space and you really can't go over that space. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I remember my very first internship, it was at the Oakland Tribune, and I was working in the arts section, and I read this story I was so proud of. And the editor was like, this is great, but it has to be half as long. I mean, you know, I don't know if they still do this, they used to measure the stories in inches rather mm-hmm. than words. So they'd be oh, I need 10 inches on this. So they were like, this needs to be, you know, however many inches shorter. And I quickly learned that if you didn't make it shorter, they would just cut from the bottom. So you have to really get everything in there, especially up top. And then if you want sort of your beautiful ending sentence, you have to make sure it fits within the length and within the structure that they've asked for. And then I've also had some great mentors. A lot of them were actually TV writers, and TV writing is also very structured. So I think that a lot of their input, I guess, helped me find that as well.
Okay. Did you approach like Heroin Complex and other long form stuff from an outliner first standpoint, or was it like structure imposed afterward?
I think I did a bit of both. I know there's always that question about, are you a plotter or a pantser? And I think I'm a little bit of both. And it depends on the project. I mean, obviously some things like I wrote this screenplay that was technically supposed to be a mystery. So that had to be very plotted from beginning to end, just because I think with a mystery, that's sort of necessary. You need to know where the clues are coming in and what's going to pay off later. With Heroine Complex, I think I actually wrote the first couple chapters, which are not the first couple chapters anymore, just off of the idea of this is a superheroine's personal assistant that's really funny. Like, what can you do with that? And, you know, sort of got into the character that way. And then I stopped and I went back and thought about the story. And then as it developed over the years, it was sort of the same thing where I would write some of it and then I would kind of stop and have to go back and really outline and structure and figure out what the story was. And especially with, because there is a slight, I guess, demonic mystery element in the book that was probably the hardest for me to figure out. And I had to go back and sort of rebeat that one and re-outline that one a lot. But overall, I think it was a mix of both.
Trish again here. For me, the plot structure really worked, but also there was structure in the characters and their development. And one thing that I really enjoyed about the book was the complexity of the relationships between Evie and Evita, and also between Evie and her little sister, Bee, and also some of the other characters too. But I just really enjoyed, you had mentioned the unhealthy codependency between Evie and originally Annie. But, you know, when they were little girls growing up together, it seemed like a pretty healthy relationship. And it's just interesting how with the stresses and strains of suddenly finding superpowers or super curses, as Evie saw hers at first, with that and everything else, how it evolved into a codependent relationship. And then what they did about that once Evie started realizing how unhealthy it was.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that because as a reader, relationships are sort of one of the things I'm really drawn to in fiction. I'm not always the best at remembering sort of different elements in a work I've enjoyed of, say, you know, the world building, although I certainly appreciate beautiful world building, but what I always tend to remember are the relationships between the characters. So that was something that was really important to me. And particularly with, as you mentioned, Evie and Evita and Evie and Bee, I think one thing I really wanted to show was how complicated relationships can be between women, and especially friendships can be with women, especially long-standing friendships. And I think, you know, there's sort of this idea that when you are friends with someone for that long, your relationship does change and grow. And sometimes you almost don't see it, you don't recognize it, and you don't recognize that you have to change and grow with it. So I think one thing that Evie and Evita in particular struggle with is their roles, which are, you know, Evie is sort of the caretaker. She always is the one propping Evita up. Evita's the fabulous one. She's the one who sort of saves Evie when they're younger from various childhood horrors.
Right.
And I think especially when you're that young, a relationship like that can cement that way. Your roles kind of cement that way, and it's hard for you to see the other person differently. So a lot of what I wanted to get into was how, as you get older, you have to start seeing the person differently, or your friendship will be sort of stuck in whatever mode it was when you were children. And also that things can get really complicated and gnarly between female best friends. But that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean you don't love each other. That doesn't mean that there's not that deep love for each other that's going to win out in the end. It's just that you have to work through your issues just like you would in any relationship.
Right. And of course, even at the beginning, Evie had some people in her corner, Scott and Lucy, who were pushing for a change in the relationship, but Evie just couldn't see that at all, or couldn't deal with it, maybe, until, you know, things other than what people said, events, started moving her willy-nilly.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that, especially with a character like Evie, at the beginning, she is very comfortable being in the background. And as we see in the book, she does have sort of some trauma in her life that has led to her being comfortable in the background.
Yes.
And part of her whole thing is she has a hard time with change and with breaking out of established patterns. And I think sometimes when you're on the outside of maybe an unhealthy friendship or unhealthy relationship, it's easier for you to see. So her friends see that this friendship is kind of in an unhealthy place. But she doesn't really see it until, you know, she absolutely has to. So.
Right. I don't want to get into spoilery territory until a little later in the interview, maybe.
Okay.
So one other thing I wanted to talk about with you is, we know from what you said earlier about the Babysitter's Club, some of the things that you were reading earlier, I saw your essay in People of Color Destroy Science Fiction, too. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what you grew up with. I'd be interested to hear some of the people that you read now for developing your craft, some of the people you read for fun, and are those the same thing?
Oh, well, yeah, I think it's all kind of wrapped up in the same big ball for me. I mean, I did grow up reading Babysitter's Club, Sweet Valley High. Mm-hmm. I was also a big sci-fi fantasy fan from a very young age. There was just a section at the library that was amazing that was all sci-fi fantasy paperbacks, and that's where I found, you know, Anne McCaffrey. She was a big influence on me growing up, and I was so excited because there were so many of her books at the library, and it seemed like whenever I finished one trilogy, there was another one waiting. Now, I mean, I love all kinds of authors. I love, you know, Seanan McGuire, obviously. She's a good friend of mine, but before we were friends, I was a fan of her work. I love October Day, and I really love Encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the Encrypted characters would enjoy being in the Demon Cupcake universe just a little bit.
Right.
Let me see who else. I'm a big romance reader. I love romance, and I love authors that kind of are both in the romance and fantasy area. So another favorite is Nalini Singh. She has a couple of great series that are set in these really intricate, well-built sci-fi worlds, and then also have these just great, passionate, intense relationships between wonderful characters. So I love her a lot. Another romance writer I love is Courtney Milan. She writes a lot of historicals, but she also wrote a great book called Trade Me, which is in the new adult area. And it actually has, it's a contemporary, but it has sort of, I guess, what you could call a bit of a sci-fi element. I don't want to give too much away. That one is amazing. That one also has an amazing relationship. That one also has an Asian American heroine, which is still, hard to find in, you know, mainstream romance and mainstream sci-fi fantasy, I would say. But yeah, I love a lot of authors. I'm a voracious reader, like a lot of writers, and one of my favorite things is to go to the bookstore. And now that I do have a book coming out, I started getting, you know, books sent to me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for some authors that becomes old hat, but for me it's still the most amazing thing.
Free books is still amazing.
I'm glad to hear from like more established people that it doesn't, like, the bloom sort of doesn't go off that rose. It's still amazing no matter what.
Yeah, sometimes it's so many that I can't even attempt to get to them all, especially since I've gotten onto some publishers' distro lists, being on podcasts. But it means that I get to kind of shop the bookstore that is my shelves.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing.
One other thing I want to get to at some point is how much I enjoyed. Sometimes things would happen that I would expect, but sometimes things would happen that I totally did not see coming, and yet they worked when I read them. But I'm not sure if we ought to save that until after the spoiler warning, or should we go ahead and
I think declare. It's fine to put up the klaxon.
Okay.
Spoilers ahead. All right, you're good.
Okay, so one thing I had been wondering about was would there turn into a parallel with the heroine trio, because you know, they kept saying it's the we're the heroine trio, except there's only two of us. And so I was wondering if maybe B was going to turn into, especially with the Rock countdown, there need to be three, I believe was the first time I saw the message. I was wondering if B was going to turn out into a superhero too, but instead it turned out that her superpower was sort of media awareness and keeping track of things. So I just enjoyed how that turned out, and I was very worried when she kind of dropped out of school, but then it turned out that things were a little more complex than that too. So right. I just enjoyed how that played out.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think you're referring to the movie, right? The heroic trio.
That oh, I'm sorry, the heroic trio.
You know, there are three heroines, so it is also a heroine trio. But yeah, the heroic trio, for those who don't know, is a Hong Kong action movie from, I think, the 90s. And it stars Michelle Yeoh, Anita Mui, and Maggie Cheung. And it's kind of like, at the time, they were kind of like the three goddesses of Hong Kong cinema. And that movie is like, I saw it at such a formative age, I can't really tell you if it is good, but it is insane and a lot of fun, and they are all fabulous. And actually, I think I can say the way that the first three books, the trilogy, is set up, also I took a bit of a cue from romance series. So the first book is Evie's book. The second book is actually Aveda / Annie's book, and it's kind of about where she goes from after the end of Heroine Complex. Mm-hmm. And then the third book is Bee's book, from her perspective. And there'll be a bit of a time jump so that she's a little bit older. She's, mm-hmm. I think, just 17 or 18 in the book, in Heroine Complex. So they are a bit of a heroic trio. They do turn into a bit of a heroic trio, and I hope that people will enjoy that.
It's very cool. Actually, I was going to ask about Heroic Trio as well, because it was one of the many Hong Kong movies that a friend of mine who was a big fan of the genre showed me. So when that showed up, I was just like, this is all of the right flavors of nerd for me. On the kind of heroic trio and like individual character stories angle, I'm always still delighted to get to read Super's stories in fiction, because, you know, in the time I've been in publishing, there's this notion that Super's prose just doesn't sell as well as comics or other things. So I wondered kind of to what degree do you read other Super's fiction, and kind of where do you stand on like what you can and can't do for that genre or the kind of stories that you tell in Supers in the prose form versus maybe other forms?
Yeah, that's so interesting, because that is, as you can imagine, definitely something I've heard as well, that superhero prose does not sell in, you know, whatever respect that is. I do try to read whatever superhero books come out that I can get my hands on. I love, like a lot of us, I've loved superheroes since I was a child. I grew up addicted to Marvel comic books. You know, I was obsessed with the X-Men cartoons, sort of all the nerd markers that we have. And I love reading about superheroes in prose. And when I was approaching this book, I guess, when I first started it, I didn't realize that was a thing, that people are sort of like, oh, superheroes don't work in prose, or they don't sell in prose. And then as we got a little farther with it, I did start hearing that more and sort of started thinking about it, because superheroes are obviously so popular in our culture, especially right now, that it's hard to understand why that is. And especially since so many books in particularly urban fantasy have characters who basically are superheroes. They maybe just don't have the branding or whatever.
No capes.
No capes. And so I guess what I try to do, because I think what I heard someone say once, and I know people are always, whenever something doesn't seem to quite work on a larger scale of like, there's a whole genre of superhero books or whatever, I feel like people are always trying to come up with a reason, like, why doesn't it work? And I think what I heard someone say once was, in a comic book or a movie, you know, you can obviously show all these great visuals. You can show the outfits. You can show all the action. You have this, the Biff Pow sound effects that you can show much easier. And sometimes when you try to describe those in prose, it might sound a little bit goofy or just not have the same effect. So I guess what I really tried to do was to dial all of those things up in the prose so that at least I hope that you can kind of hear the sound effects as a reader. Like sometimes I just put the sound effects in the text, like bam, pow, you know, whatever. And I try to add, or to really, I guess, play into that idea of, yes, the costumes are ridiculous. You know, they're described in the book often in loving detail. But because they're, you know, they're so often being described from Evie's perspective, and Evie is, as a personal assistant, a much more normal, you know, mundane sort of person. She talks a lot about how she wears hoodies and Chuck Taylors. She kind of has that perspective of, oh, this costume is ridiculous, so I'm going to describe it in these ridiculous terms. And I guess I just tried to turn all of those elements up so that hopefully they're still effective in prose, even though you don't have the visuals to go along with them.
Yeah, and I think every prose supers book that's awesome, the way that Heroine Complex is, makes there be more breathing room for all the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I do note that supers prose does seem to still be pretty active in the independent publishing side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've seen trends that had been working on the indie side picked up by trade houses. So maybe we'll see some super stuff going on, because we also have like the Wild Card series, mm-hmm. kind of curated by George Martin and company. Yeah. You know, that's kind of always ongoing, and it had a big reboot in the last few years where they kind of brought on a new crop. And then I do see like Supers Romance on the SFF romance charts. So you've got some good company there, and I think you dialed stuff in nicely, and it can fit under the gloss of urban fantasy because of the way that how many supers there are and kind of the way that things are set up. So you've kind of snuck under the radar while still delivering a very effective super story.
Right. Thank you. I mean, I do hope that I would love to see superhero fiction become more of a big trend, because I want to read more of it.
Yeah.
I also liked that we saw the superpowers develop throughout the story. So it started out really as the kind of urban fantasy where people just have maybe a little extra oomph, but Aveda really, really trains hard, and Evie starts out afraid of her power, and then that grows. So you started out on just a little more than human powers, and that ramped up during the story for reasons to do with the story. And I liked how that worked together too.
No, thank you. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing that's always been interesting to me as a reader, is sort of how heroes grow into their powers. One of my favorite superheroes is Jean Grey from the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I think I always loved about her story is that she has this power that grows and sort of gets out of control. It's very dangerous, and it has the potential to literally destroy the world. And meanwhile, she's kind of just a girl, mm-hmm. you know, who has been given this thing that she didn't really want, and now she has to deal with the fact that it could kill everyone she loves. And I always like that interplay. I like that idea of when you have this thing inside of you that you didn't necessarily ask for. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with it? How do you deal with it as it gets bigger and possibly more dangerous? And do you have it in you to sort of harness it and use it for the greater good? Or is it something that you're going to struggle with? And that's something else I was kind of trying to address with several of the characters. And then I also honestly love the idea of sort of crappy superpowers. Because I feel like if something happened and a bunch of us suddenly got superpowers, they wouldn't all be awesome. Like, someone would get the ability to, you know, I don't know, automatically empty the trash or something. Like it would be, or like, you know, make a really good pancake. Although that's actually a pretty good power. But, you know, like, so, like, I feel like some of us would just not get powers that were suddenly amazing. And we'd have to figure out if, you know, what am I going to use this for? Or can I really use it for anything?
Right.
And one thing I love about the character of Aveda is, you know, her power is set up as, it's telekinesis, and it's not really that great, and she can't actually do a lot with it. So she compensates by working out really hard, going on this crazy, like, superheroine diet, so she's very fit, having the best, most fabulous costumes. And that really speaks to the sort of overachiever in me. And we sort of hint at the fact that she has the classic Asian tiger mom, which again I had, and who's basically always trying to get her to be better. So I just love the idea that there, you know, there's this person who she's been given this superpower and it's maybe not the best, but she still sees it as a sign of, but I can be the best. I just have to work really, really hard.
Right, and right. That was just a really great feeling from her that, you know, she was just determined to, as you said, make the most of her destiny.
Yeah, like her real superpower is just that she's very determined. And she knows that she can be fabulous and she can be the best. And, you know, I think that that is probably what would happen if a lot of us got superpowers and some of them weren't very good. Some of us would figure out how to sort of make the most of that.
That's very cool. So you've done contemporary romance with kind of nerd cons, you've done urban fantasy superheroes. Is there some other portion of geekdom that you're looking to write someday, either in the current series or elsewhere?
Well, I would actually like to go back and write more contemporary romance and to do it in a bit more of a full way. And that's not just, you know, to diss One Con Glory. I still am very proud of One Con Glory. But it is a novella. It doesn't really have a chance to maybe develop the characters as much as I would like. In a more sort of just, I don't know, base sense. When I wrote One Con Glory, I was not ready to write sex scenes. So I did not. It's very like pan to the fireplace. And I think that one thing I really admire about a lot of the contemporary romance I enjoy is that the sex scenes are so well written, they're so emotional, they totally contribute to the plot, and they give you a better understanding of those characters. I would like to write a contemporary romance, maybe still in sort of that geek nerd world, because I think that's obviously a world I'm very familiar with, and to just write it in a more full way with a, you know, longer book, characters I get to develop a little bit more, relationship I get to develop a little bit more, and actual sex scenes instead of just, you know, pan to the fireplace.
Well, having read some geeky contemporary romance along those lines, I'm all for having more.
Good.
Yeah, that is definitely something for us to look forward to in the future if you try your hand at that. But I did enjoy the romance in the heroine complex. We haven't actually talked about that much yet. But that was definitely an important part of what happened in the book. I would still call the Evie and Aveda relationship the heart of the book, but it's very important that Evie eventually gets a boyfriend and that they turn out to be important for each other's personal growth, too. And also their relationship ends up important to the plot. So it all works together well. I was happy that a certain character quirk of this person that I was annoyed with at first and then kept kind of returning to and wondering about throughout the book did turn out to have a plot-related reason and not just that he didn't like people.
Well, I say he also maybe doesn't like people that much. I mean, you know, in sort of the classic nerd antisocial way, not in a mean way.
That's not what I meant. I just meant didn't want to have to deal with people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes, that part of the book is obviously very important to me as well. I've actually heard it called, because the romance element is very prominent, I've heard it called romanticy, which I like. And it was also really important to me to develop that relationship well, so that you could sort of see both people's perspectives and how they kind of change and grow together throughout the course of the book. So it's not like, you know, just one person has to change, the other person is already perfect or whatever.
Right.
They do have to sort of learn how to interface and communicate like humans. And I think that in terms of Evie's development as a character, the sex parts are actually very important. Because she is a character who's very locked down. She is very closed off. She does not share a lot of herself. And because of things that she's hiding, there are reasons for that. There are reasons she won't let herself be vulnerable, particularly in a physical way. So that was very important for me to show. And I also, to be honest, I have probably the most fun writing the romance parts, just because as a viewer, that's what I'm so into. You know, I'm such a shipper. I like watching all those parts. I think I've talked about this before. When I was younger, I had all the novelizations of the three Star Wars movies we had at the time. And I would read them obsessively, and I loved how they gave you sort of extra insight into what the characters were thinking. Mm-hmm. And the scene that I read the most times, like over and over, was the first kiss between Han Solo and Princess Leia. And I just really loved how that was done, how it was constructed. And then I guess that sort of hinted at maybe some of the things I would eventually enjoy writing, was I just really enjoyed reading the choreography of that first kiss in prose form.
Yeah, that's very cool. I do recommend the other Star Wars novelizations, including for the prequels. I read the one for Revenge of the Sith, and it really opened up the film for me, because it reinterpreted how Anakin's fall worked, mm-hmm. and the kind of his interiority to it, just because of the way that Hayden Christensen was directed. I didn't feel like I got a lot of that in the film. But then in the novelization, as you say, you get that extra side, which I think is something that prose is just better than practically any creative form, that ability to go deep with people, which is super cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I don't have anything else. Trish, did you have a one last question?
Well, is there anything that you would like to talk about that we haven't happened to bring up, Sarah?
I don't know.
Any other recent reads you really enjoyed that you'd love to share with our audience?
Oh, let me think. Wait, hold on. I can actually look. I keep a sort of record of my recent read.
Oh, great.
I haven't had a lot of time recently to read a lot of things. Hold on. Let me see.
Well, launching a book is a little bit of work.
It's a little bit of work as I'm learning. Going through my list.
Well, you could tell us what your favorite part of Hamilton is. There's no wrong answer, except if you haven't heard it, then you have to lie and make something up.
Well, I actually was... Okay, I do have a couple of reads I can talk about, but I actually was lucky enough to see Hamilton recently.
Oh!
I went to New York to do sort of publishing things and meet with publishing people. And a friend of mine who's super, actually, I guess I can just say it's Shannon again, because everybody knows this about her. One of her superpowers is getting tickets to anything, anything that seems impossible. And she had actually gotten these tickets months ago. So it was sort of, Hamilton was already a thing, but it was not quite the thing it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because I knew I was going to be seeing it, when I see a musical, I like my first experience of it to actually not be listening to the soundtrack, but to be seeing it, mm-hmm. And experiencing the music that way. And so I managed to not listen to it before I saw it. I saw a couple things. Like I saw, you know, when they were on the Grammys and a little bit of the Tonys, but I didn't really know, I didn't know a lot about it except what, you know, everything people say on Twitter. So now I understand all the references that people make on Twitter. I finally know why whenever you're at Hamilton, you have to say you're in the room where it happens. I feel like my, you know, my understanding has opened up. And yeah, I loved it. It was amazing. It's one thing I don't think that hype can actually ruin, which is amazing because the hype for it is so huge.
Yeah.
I'm delighted that I got to see it with the original cast before several of them leave.
Right.
And I think that, I guess, something about it that actually does relate a little bit back to Heroin Complex, not to make it all about me, but I was very moved by a lot of it. Like everyone, I was sobbing at the end. Mm-hmm. But one thing about it that really moved me right at the beginning, like I was actually getting choked up at the beginning, was just seeing this amazing cast of people of color and watching that and watching them all get to be protagonists and at the center of the story. And that's still such a novelty. That's still such a thing that I don't feel like I get to see that often, that it was just beautiful. Like I was like crying because, you know, I'm half Asian and Philippa Sue is half Asian and she's out there kicking ass. And it was, you know, that was just amazing. And, you know, that was one thing with Heroin Complex is the main characters are Asian American women.
Right.
And they are very centered. They get to do all the things protagonists do. As I've said many times in, you know, other places, I wanted them to be able to have fun and fall in love and do bad karaoke and have good sex and eat junk food and sort of do all these fun things that protagonists get to do and be centered. And so seeing Hamilton, which is another work where people of color are very centered, was very moving for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I got to see a Sunday matinee a few months back. So I got to see Javier Munoz, who killed it. And having that one difference from the original cast recording, because I had been listening to it kind of obsessively for some time, mm-hmm. Having that changed all of the relationships on the stage. So I felt like I got a whole experience with that matinee that complemented the whole experience that I gotten with the original cast recording. Cause I come from musical theater people, but so it's fun to get to participate in this thing. And, I think you're probably pretty rare in kind of the fandom world in having seen it live before listening to the album a bunch of times.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. I was really determined to hold out just because I knew I had the tickets. If I hadn't known that, I probably would have caved and listened to it. But that's cool that it was that it complemented your experience in that way, because I am interested in hopefully seeing it with different cast members. And, you know, I have a ticket to see it at the Pantages next year, which will be the touring cast. So that'll be really interesting. But that's really cool to hear. Okay, now I can give you a couple of my recent recommended reads if you would like.
Yeah, fantastic.
Hit us. Okay. So, so some recent books I read that I really enjoyed. One that I think everybody enjoyed, All the Birds in the Sky by Charlie Jane Anders. I thought that book was a really cool mix of science fiction and fantasy. And having known Charlie Jane now for a number of years, it also had this great effect of sort of feeling like talking to her, like I could really hear her voice. I could hear all the things that make her such a great writer and such a great person. I love the characters and I just love sort of this, interesting, unique, weird San Francisco world she came up with that still feels very much like San Francisco, but obviously has some key futuristic differences. And we both have a reference to Humphrey Slocum in our books, which I think is cool. Although it's very, very different context. Another one that I read that I really liked is Last Call at the Nightshade Lounge by Paul Kruger. And that is an urban fantasy novel that also has an Asian American female protagonist, which I think is very cool. And it's about bartenders who get superpowers when they drink different kinds of alcohol. So it has like this alcohol magic element, and it has some drink recipes throughout the book, which I think is a lot of fun. And Paul and I have sort of formed a little club because we are both HAPA writers who have debut urban fantasies coming out this summer with Asian American female leads. It's a very small club. So we've been enjoying that a lot.
It's very cool. Yeah, I got to meet Paul at Emerald City and picked up a copy of the arc, which I'm looking forward to getting to, because that is totally up my alley.
I think so. I mean, I think having read your work, and also if you enjoyed sort of the fun aspects of Heroine Complex, I think this is totally up your alley, and that you'll really enjoy it. And it's another great cast of fun, diverse characters, and I really hope that there's a sequel.
Excellent. And we do know that there is a sequel and a third book coming from you in this series. Do you have a date for number two?
It's coming out July 2017, so they'll be about a year apart. And I think the idea is that they will, you know, for however long the series goes, they'll keep coming out in July, because I think it's a fun summer book. Fun to have it come out kind of right before Comic-Con. It goes a lot with that, obviously. So, yeah, July 2017, you should be able to get the sequel.
Excellent. Is that is the title of the second one set?
I think it is. I don't know if I'm allowed to say what it is.
Okay.
But it is, because literally just today, actually, we had a little email session about it, and I was waiting to see. I'd run it by a few people. Like, I ran it by my agent. I ran it by some beta readers, ran it by some friends. And sort of the last person was my editor. So I was like, oh, I really hope she likes it, because I've been calling this book by this name for so long now. Mm-hmm. And she gave her stamp of approval. So I think it's good to go. And hopefully we'll be able to say what it is soon.
Yeah, and if you want to kind of follow up with that, we can put it in the show notes, depending on when this releases. And we'll definitely keep pointing folks at your work so that they know what's going on. Where can people follow you on, like, website and other social media?
Okay, so people can find me most often on Twitter, probably way too much on Twitter. It's just my name, Sarah Kuhn, S-A-R-A-H-K-U-H-N, on Twitter. And then my website is heroinecomplex.com. I always say that's like super heroin, not like drugs heroin.
Yep.
And I also have a Facebook page, which is linked from the website, which I am not on quite as much, but I'm trying to get better at. So those are probably the main places you can find me.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for coming on and talking about your fabulous book with us. And Trish, thank you for being my intrepid co-host. This is the first time we've done an interview together. So high five.
High five.
Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you reading it. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed talking to you.
Awesome. Great. Well, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone. Bye. Not an awkward ending.
No. You can find author Mike Underwood at his blog, michaelrunderwood.com, or on Twitter, at Mike R. Underwood. Find journalist Trish E. Matson on Twitter, at P-E-M-A-T-S-O-N. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We made some edits, including adding sound effects and shortening the length. You can support our show by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so by sending it to skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the suggested topics form at the top, or read some of our reviews and discussions there. You can find us on Twitter at Skiffy and Fanty, or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us there. Thanks for listening, and we hope you join us next time.